When it comes to understanding and interpreting any of the Gospels, any scripture, any passage in the scriptures, it's not enough simply just to read the words on the page. It's a good start. But you need to see and understand, where is that passage in relation to the rest of the work, the rest of the Gospel, the rest of the letter, the rest of the book? What's happening immediately before? What's happening immediately after? Where does it fit in the overall structure and flow of the story? And every book of the scriptures has a story that it's telling. Where does this book fit in with the rest of the flow of scriptures? Are there key words? Are there key themes that are repeated, that are being picked up from other places, other passages? You also need to understand the culture and the context and the geography. What are the markers? What are the things that are being indicated and spoken about in this passage? For the first of these, we're given this marker of a geographic location, that Jesus takes his disciples away from the crowds. Once again, we've been seeing this theme over the last few weeks, the sense of Jesus wanting to withdraw. He takes them into the very north, beyond the territory that was ever really the part of Israel, up to this region called Caesarea Philippi. It's just the edge of the plain, heading up into the foothills of Mount Hermon, the most massive. It's 2,815 meters high, so it's a pretty high mountain, often snow-covered now, and it's on the border between modern-day Syria and Lebanon. So he takes them away from what is normally seen as Jewish territory, although it's still got lots of Jewish connections. There was an ancient synagogue there, but it was also a place of the worship of the foreign gods, the Baals. There were at least 14 different temples in that region. Most famously, it's dedicated to the worship of the god Pan. The city was dedicated. There was a temple that was built to the Caesar, to honoring him. And of course, the Caesars had been declaring themselves to be the son of God. And so it's all of this in the background. Geographically, it's a rocky kind of outcrop. And it's a little bit like, you know, what we're here, strip of coast, and then up to this very massive, mountainous, rocky region. So all of that kind of textures what's happening in this scene. And then Jesus asks them these two questions. First, what do the people say? What are the crowds? Who do they say that I am? And these various prophets, or John the Baptist, all these people who have experienced the wonder of God's presence. But he nails it down. But you, and the you is emphatic there, you, who do you say that I am? Because it's the question that Jesus is always wanting to know of us. You know, it's never enough just to have an opinion. It's never enough to simply say what our parents would say, or what our teachers would say, or what our priests would say. It's this crucial question of the personal sense of God. Just as, you know, it's often been said that God does not have any grandchildren, only children. All of us have to be brought into that personal relationship and to answer this question. Now, Simon steps forward and he makes this declaration, bringing in these two elements of faith. Both that Jesus is the Messiah, the Messiah, the Anointed One, the Christ. And he's also the Son of the Living God. Now, both of these claims, both of these statements about Jesus have already been made. Chapters 11 through to 13 are all this exploration about the way that people were reacting and responding to Jesus. And most of the people have already been declaring that Jesus is indeed the Messiah. The Pharisees and others are saying, no, he's not the Messiah. He can't be the Messiah because he's not following all of the things that are necessary for the Messiah to do. And 2 weeks ago, we had the story of the disciples on the boat, Peter foolishly getting out of the boat and walking on the water. And then when he got back into the boat, all of the disciples were told, bowed down in worship, saying that Jesus is the Son of God. So we've already heard these declarations of faith. But Simon is bringing these two together in this declaration, this creedal statement, if you like, saying what it is that he believes, that Jesus is both Messiah and the Son of the Living God. Now, it's extraordinary the way that Jesus responds to him at this point, when he says to him, you know, not flesh and blood didn't reveal this to you, but you are blessed. And again, it's this word blessing. It should echo in us from the Sermon on the Mount and the beginning of the sermon with all of those blessings, the Beatitudes, But it's happened in a number of times in Matthew's gospel where Jesus has already said that this community is blessed for their belief, blessed for their striving, blessed for their love and for their service. And so this word blessing is also significant. And whenever you hear those words, just take time in prayer to ponder, you know, where have I heard that before? What is the context? How is that speaking to me now? But Simon is here then declared, and we really shouldn't be calling him Peter at this point, because it's not a name that's been used. There's no history, no record of anyone being called Peter until this point. And so Simon is given this nickname. You are a rock, and on this rock I will build my ecclesia, my church, the called out ones. And it's a profound moment of faith. Again, remembering the geography, remembering the whole sense that you're in the back. The backdrop is this rocky mountain leading, you know, many thousands of meters high into the air. So this massive rock. Remembering that so many of, at least a dozen times in the Hebrew scriptures, where God is called the rock. A rock that is solid, able to establish a whole foundation and life to be built upon. And this is the way that Jesus sees Peter. And it's an amazing moment in that Peter, you know, of course, is this fragile figure, as we saw 2 weeks ago. You know, he does what is not necessary for him to test the faith in Jesus. You know, all these things, and next week we'll see that he makes this declaration and then gets it completely wrong, and Jesus has to rebuke him. So Peter is this, you know, enigmatic kind of character and figure that challenges us to really understand, well, what is faith about? How are we to respond? How are we to make sense of our own lives and our own faith? But Peter is also wonderful in that he doesn't get it right all the time. He doesn't have this perfect catechism-ready answer to his faith. He's able to struggle. He's able to work out things along the way. And that can be a sign and example for us as well, that we don't have to get it right all the time. It's not about our declarations, but it's about our heart. And it's in the heart of Peter, it's in the heart of Simon, transformed and changed, that we're able to see this sign of our own lives, this call for us to simply surrender, to give our hearts to God, and to know that when we are faced with this question, we're given this possibility of knowing God personally. It's not enough, as I said, just to know about God, but it's in that belief of who is God for me? How can I know that love? How can I respond to that love? And the invitation for us is indeed to be part of that community of faith that challenges each other just to grow in that knowledge and love of God ourselves.